Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 29, Krishna and the Gopis Meet. Text number 4. Nishamya gitam tadananga vadanam. Nishamya gitam tadananga vadanam. Raja Sriya Krishna Grihita Manasa. Raja Sriya Krishna Grihita Manasa. Raja Anyonyam Alakshito Yama. Jagmu Anyonyam Alakshito Yamya. Sayatra Kanto Java Lola Kundala. Sayatra Kanto Java Lola Kundala. Whose minds? Ajagmu. They went. Anyonyam. To one another. Alakshita, unnoticed. Ujama, they're going forward. Sa, he. Yatra, where? Kanta, their boyfriend. Java, because of their haste. Lola, swinging. Kundala, whose earrings? Translation and purport by disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When the young women of Vrindavan heard Krishna's flute song, which arouses romantic feelings, their minds were captivated by the Lord. They went to where their lover waited, each unknown to the others, moving so quickly that their earrings swung back and forth. Purport. Apparently, each gopi went secretly, hoping to avoid advertising to her rivals the fact that young Krishna was in the mood for romantic affairs. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti poetically describes the situation as follows. Krishna instigated a terrible act of thievery in Vrindavan, where, when he played on his flute, the song of his flute entered through the ears of the gopis into the inner treasure chamber of their hearts. That wonderful music stole all their most valuable possessions, their sobriety, shyness, fear, and discrimination, along with their very minds. And in a split second, this music delivered all these goods to Krishna. Now each gopi went to beg the Lord to return her personal property. Each beautiful young girl was thinking, I have to capture that great thief. And thus they went forward, each unknown to the others. Om Gyana Shramananda Sya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Umli Tam Yena Chakshu Shigurin Tasma Shigurina Maha. Yes, I was born in ignorance. Hey Krishna Kruna Sinudina Banduja Gapate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate. Hey Krishna Kruna Sinudina Banduja Gapate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Rama Rama Hare Hare. When the young women of Vrindavan heard Krishna's flute song, which arouses romantic feelings, their minds were captivated by the Lord. They went to where their lover waited, each unknown to the others, moving so quickly that their earrings swung back and forth. So it's a very, very poetic translation we're reading. The Sanskrit was very nice. Very potent section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this section of the 10th canto, coming up to the very intimate pastimes with Krishna and the cowherd girls, of course, which culminates in the rasa dance in a few more chapters. So these are the topmost intimate affairs, the Madhurya rasa. Out of all the rasas, this is the topmost rasa we're hearing about, Krishna's relationship with the cowherd girls. So it's interesting that hearing about these pastimes, the whole of the Bhagavatam previous to the 10th canto is a build-up to qualify us to be able to hear and appreciate these pastimes properly. The I think Virajan Prabhu was explaining in a class that the 9th canto is about becoming free of sex desire, the importance of being free of sex desire. So when we hear these 10th canto pastimes, we're able to fully appreciate them, relish them by hearing them. So, in other words, we have to understand that these pastimes have no relationship at all with this material world. And in fact, this material world is nothing but a perverted reflection of these intimate affairs of the spiritual world. So we find in the spiritual world, everything is present. There's form, there's pastimes, there's qualities. Everything is personal in the spiritual realm or the transcendental realm. It's not impersonal. Of course, to the Mayavadi philosophers, this is just these activities are just affairs of the material world. They think that these affairs of Krishna are just going on under the influence of Tri Guna Mayi, the three modes of material nature. But as we know, by reading the previous cantos in the Bhagavatam, we have understood Krishna's position properly, that he is the absolute truth beyond the modes of material nature. And his body is Satchitananda, is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. So all of these pastimes, similarly, are Satchitananda. They have nothing to do with the mundane affairs of the material world. So this is a very important point Prabhupada would stress, about being qualified to hear and appreciate these pastimes. Like you give the example sometimes of the Bhagavat Saptahas they'd have in India, where someone would come along and speak on the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. They'd go straight to the Rasa Leela pastimes, and they would speak to the audience and feign ecstasy when they were speaking on these pastimes. But they were completely unqualified, because after they were in their own private affairs, they'd be engaging in illicit sex life. So they were disqualified for being able to actually speak with any potency on the 10th canto. And Prabhupada would say, if one is still attached to mundane sex life, then one is not able to fully appreciate these pastimes that we're hearing about. So we have to be very aware of Krishna's position in order to be able to appreciate it. Understand how Krishna is separate from the material world, and how everything in the material world is just a reflection of these pastimes, in fact. Because we can find in the mundane material world that these things are going on also in the material world, that young girls are being attracted by young boys. We also find it is going on in this material world. At the moment I'm reading Yogeshwara's book about George Harrison, Here Comes the Sun. It's come out fairly recently, and it's all about George Harrison's transition from being a young man, his involvement in the Beatles and being very successful, and then moving on into spiritual life, and his travels to India and how he met the devotees and so forth. So it's interesting when you read about his time when he was in the Beatles, how when they became very, very popular, that that so many young girls were chasing after them, were chanting their names and glorifying them, and at concerts they were playing at, that the young ladies were screaming so loud that nobody else could actually hear the music that they were playing. So we can see that all of this is just a reflection of, or perverted reflection of what's going on in the spiritual world, that young girls are attracted to young men playing music because it comes from the spiritual world. that Krishna is playing his flute, and we can see the effect his flute playing is having on the young cowherd girls of Vrindavan, that their minds are completely stolen away by this wonderful flute playing of Krishna. They hear the sound vibration of Krishna's flute, and immediately their minds are attracted, and they're drawn to go to Krishna just by hearing his flute playing. So this is the effect of Krishna's flute, the music that Krishna's played, as compared to the music in the material world that is basically based on sex life. If you find most of the songs that people sing about and play about are either about hankering after mundane sex life or lamenting after they've lost it. That's all the so-called love affairs are in the material world. In fact, Prabhupada would say there is no such thing as love in the material world, there is only lust. And there is a fine, great difference, in fact, between lust and love. And when the gopis hear Krishna's flute playing, it's because they have just spontaneous love for Krishna. Because, as we've spoken about before in the Nectar of Devotion, there are different ecstatic stimuluses which arouse ecstatic love within the hearts of Krishna's devotees. So this is the effect that Krishna's flute playing has upon the gopis, has a spontaneous love, arises within their heart, and so powerful that they're not able to control that. And even though some of the cowherd ladies were married, their husbands weren't able to check them, they still were drawn, they had to leave. And some of them were even forcibly checked by their husbands, and it's explained that even though they were forcibly checked and stopping to go and see Krishna, that Yoga Maya arranged that a material form of them remained there, but actually in their spiritual body they went out to see Krishna in the forest to be with him. So this is the effect of Krishna's flute playing. And of course there's different other aspects to Krishna's personality and nature which stimulates ecstatic love within his devotees. And of course Krishna's flute playing isn't just attractive to the cowherd girls, but also it's attractive to everybody within Vrindavan. But their feelings of devotion will be arise differently according to their rasa they have with Krishna. Because also the cows are also attracted by Krishna's flute playing. Of course their rasa with Krishna is qualitatively a bit different to that of the mood of the gopis. That the gopis have madhurya ras, this conjugal love, whereas the cows obviously that conjugal ras, that madhurya ras isn't prevalent. The mood is more of a shantaras, it's one of neutrality. So there's different things which will arise a devotee's love for Krishna. So we have to understand these differences between mundane love and spiritual love. There is a big difference there. Mundane love is when one is wanting to enjoy their own senses, whereas that is lust actually, when one is just interested in their own sense gratification. But love is when one is interested in pleasing Krishna's senses. That is actually love, when one has developed that desire within the heart of how to please Krishna. So we have to understand these differences between the spiritual and the material. In fact, there's a very pertinent section in the Bhagavad Gita which helps to give us a deeper insight into seeing the differences between the material and the spiritual. I was reading it this morning actually, and I thought it was quite relevant to developing our understanding of the difference between the material and the spiritual, and how we can cultivate more attachment for the spiritual. So it's that very famous verse in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Yoga of the Supreme Person, where Krishna is explaining about the upside-down banyan tree. So it's a nice thing to meditate upon. Over the weekend, myself and Vrindaranya went to out to the Dandenong Ranges because they've got some beautiful parks out there. And it's a nice time of the year, obviously, because it's autumn time, just like actually this past time we're hearing about now is taking place at the onset of autumn. So autumn time is a very beautiful time because the leaves are lovely colours, and in Vrindavan it's a nice time there. It's not too hot, not too cold. It's quite a pleasant time of the year. We read it in a few verses coming up. It gives a nice description of the moon rising. We're setting a very beautiful scene. These are all the arrangements of Yoga Maya to create a very beautiful scene so Krishna can enjoy his pastimes, his most intimate pastimes. Because when Krishna wants to enjoy, he has different potencies which will make nice arrangements and settings so Krishna can fully relish his pastimes in those settings. So we can get an appreciation for autumn even in the material world, that we can see when I was out in Dandenong, that the trees are all beautiful colours, and there are reds and there are yellows and so forth. Of course, all of these things, I guess from a devotee's perspective, we understand, like Prabhupada would say, if you appreciate the artistry, you should appreciate the artist behind these things. So when we see beauty in the material world, we understand this comes from Krishna. So, yeah, me, myself and Vrindavan were appreciating the nice, beautiful colours that we're seeing, and we could see in one place there was a big lake, more of a pond than a lake really, and it had a tree on the side, and we could see quite clearly the reflection of the tree in this pond, and you could see it looked as though it was upside down in the water almost. So it made me think of this verse actually, when I saw that reflected tree within the water. I must have become a Krishna conscious, as made me think of the Bhagavad Gita. Must be making some advancement. So it is said there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is a knower of the Vedas. I'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. Nice to meditate upon some of these points that Prabhupada makes in this purport, because it's very pertinent to helping us develop a deep understanding of Krishna's pastimes we're reading about. The entanglement of this material world is compared here to a banyan tree. For one who is engaged in fruitive activities, there is no end to the banyan tree. He wanders from one branch to another, to another, to another. The tree of this material world has no end, and for one who is attached to this tree, there is no possibility of liberation. The Vedic hymns meant for elevating oneself accord the leaves of this tree. This tree's roots grow upward because they begin from where Brahma is located, the topmost planet of this universe. If one can understand this indestructible tree of illusion, then one can get out of it. This process of extrication should be understood. In the previous chapters, it has been explained that there are many processes by which to get out of the material world. And up to the 13th chapter, we have seen that devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the best way. Now, the basic principle of devotional service is detachment from material activities and attachment to the transcendental service of the Lord. The process of breaking attachment to the material world is discussed in the beginning of this chapter. The root of this material existence grows upward. This means that it begins from the total material substance, from the topmost planet of the universe. From there, the whole universe is expanded, with so many branches representing the various planetary systems. The fruits represent the results of the living entity's activities, namely religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Now, there is no ready experience in this world of a tree situated with its branches down and its roots upward, but there is such a thing. That tree can be found beside a reservoir of water. We see that the trees on the bank reflect upon the water with their branches down and the roots up. In other words, the tree of this material world is only a reflection of the tree of the spiritual world. This reflection of the spiritual world is situated on desire. Just as a tree's reflection is situated on water, desire is the cause of things being situated in this reflected material light. One who wants to get out of this material existence must know this tree thoroughly through analytical study, then he can cut off his relationship with it. So this is a very important analogy to meditate upon to help us develop an understanding of our position in this material world. Because we can see a banyan tree, if you've seen a banyan tree in India before, some of them grow great distances because the root grows downward, and then from that root another branch stems and it grows upward, and another root grows, and it continues growing on and on, outwards and outwards and outwards, and it's almost impossible to tell where the original root began from. So that is the position of us in the material world, that through our own mundane speculations and senses, we will not understand the ultimate root cause from which everything emanates from. We can see now that most people just have no idea whatsoever about where they come from. We can see that most people accept material mundane science as the authority. And material science has no real understanding with any substance about the origin or the root cause of everything. Now, everything is just based on this theory that everything came from the Big Bang, and then from that chunk, everything began to form. And then after millions of years of evolution and spiraling gases and so forth, then life slowly evolved from that. And this theory is very deeply rooted. Everybody just accepts that now as a fact, there, that we evolved. Like if you watch any like current affairs shows, then that's the underlying assumption behind everything, is that we've evolved from monkeys. They had a thing on 60 Minutes recently about a tribe in Papua New Guinea, and this tribe in Papua New Guinea supposedly has had no contact with the outside world. Like they've had no interaction with no European civilization before. And a journalist and a guy, an author who was writing books about them, was saying, yeah, just imagine if we went back in time 10,000 years ago, and this is how people were living. They used rocks for chopping down trees, no sharpened blunt tools, and this is how we live. This is our ancestry. This is where we come from. And everyone is going, yeah, that's where we come from. Yeah, that's right. People just accept that. It's a fact, you know, that we've come from monkeys. So it's quite funny when you watch these these speculations coming out just accepted as the truth, because no one has any intelligence to actually go a little bit deeper in their thinking, that they just accept on blind faith that what the scientists are telling them is truth. That if we read the Vedic texts, we actually get a complete different understanding of our origins and where we come from. You know, for a devotee, we accept, yes, we understand that Aham Sarvasya Prabhu, that Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes. Everything comes from Krishna. Obviously, there's a process of how that comes into being, but we understand Krishna is the root cause of everything. And we don't just accept that on blind faith, but we accept that on the understanding that it's realized knowledge coming through a bona fide succession of teachers. And like Prabhupada would say that, when Virajan Prabhu, I think, was making this point in one of his classes, that if people challenge us saying, why do you accept this for? And then Virajan Prabhu was making the point that, I think it was a point that Prabhupada even made, is, do you think that Mahavacharya was a fool? No. Do you think that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all these great scholars, do you think that they were great fools and had nothing better to do with their time than just to have some sort of sentimental belief in this? No. Now, we accept this knowledge based on great acharyas and our succession of parampara, that we just don't accept knowledge on blind faith, but we accept it based on the understanding that the acharyas have given us. Because we know the acharyas in our parampara were not ordinary personalities. If we study the lives of some of our acharyas, we can see that these were not ordinary persons. Like Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati was not an ordinary person. He had superhuman intelligence. He could defeat so many great scholars and pundits. Like we had the famous story of when the Mayavadis wanted to invite Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati to come to a debate. And they said, oh, but you can't bring the Bhagavatam. No, you can't use Bhagavad Gita. You can't use any of the Vaishnava texts. And he says, that's fine. I'll come. I'll still come. And they said, well, you can't use this text. You can't use that text. You can't use any of the texts, any of the Vedic texts. And he says, it's fine. I'll still come. Because he was so intelligent and so powerful that he was able to defeat them, even without having to necessarily use the Vedic texts, the Vaishnava texts. And we see stories of Madhavacharya and Ramanujacharya, very, very powerful personalities. So we understand that these acharyas were qualified to spread knowledge, to give real knowledge, to give the truth, in fact. Whereas we can see with mundane scientists, they present themselves as presenting truth, but actually they're cheaters. And Prabhupada would say that they are the cheated. The cheaters and the cheated. That's how it would explain how life is in the material world. Those who are cheaters, presenting themselves as being knowledgeable and presenting factual evidence, and that is cheating everybody else. So that is the position in this material world, the cheaters and the cheated. So when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we're coming across the absolute truth. The absolute truth is something which has existed before time began, it exists now in the present, and in the future when everything ceases to exist, after cosmic annihilation, then the absolute truth will continue to exist. This is what it means to be absolute, something which will always exist. So this is Krishna. And these pastimes we're reading about, they are also absolute truth. These pastimes are going on eternally. They have nothing to do with this material world. They have nothing to do with the mundane affairs between men and women. These pastimes are eternal. They're going on eternally, forever. In the past, now, and in the future, they'll always go on. And we're being given the opportunity to actually enter back into these pastimes again, enter back into our constitutional position as being a servant of Krishna, so we can engage in these pastimes. These pastimes are not just for us to read about and think, oh, that's nice, yeah, Krishna and the gopis and the cowherd boys, oh, that's nice, good for them. But we're being given an opportunity for us to actually go back into these pastimes, enter into these pastimes in the mood of a gopi or in the mood of a cowherd boy, being one of Krishna's friends in Vrindavan. So this is what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give us, as an opportunity to become qualified so we can enter into these pastimes of Krishna and relish these pastimes. So the pastimes are not just necessarily for the nitya siddhas, but they're for anybody who wants to try and endeavour to get out of this material world as the goal of life. So this is the goal of life, is to go back to the spiritual world. Because we find in the material world, everybody's into, the materialists are into goal setting, setting goals for themselves. Like at the moment I'm in a business I'm developing at the moment, and part of that you have to associate with other people who are involved in this business, and they're all very motivated people. They're all wanting to get ahead, but all of the goals are just in the material world. They're all wanting extra income, they're wanting money, they're wanting financial freedom. They're wanting all these very, very short-term goals, but that's as far as they can go. They can't go beyond that. That they can't see that beyond all these temporary relative goals, there is a higher destination beyond these things, which is Krishna, love for Krishna, Krishna praying. So devotees, also, we have goals and aspirations, but not to try and necessarily achieve something in the material world. Our real goal is to go back to spiritual world. Our real goal is to reawaken our love for Krishna. So by reading this 10th canto, it's giving us a nice opportunity how to stimulate and arise within our hearts this desire to want to go back to Krishna and be with Him and enjoy these pastimes. As Prabhupada was saying in that purport that, in other words, the tree of this material world is only a reflection of the real tree of the spiritual world. This reflection of the spiritual world is situated on desire, just as a tree's reflection is situated on water. Desire is the cause of things being situated in this reflected material light. So you can see everything is based upon desire. So we have to cultivate that desire within our heart to sincerely want to reawaken our love for Krishna. That desire has to be cultivated, like that creeper that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks about in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Bhakti Lata Bij, this creeper of devotion. So that creeper of devotion has to be protected. We have to really nourish and protect and water that creeper of devotion, or that desire, that strong desire to want to leave the material world behind altogether, leave all of our attachments behind and go back to Krishna in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan. So it is all based on our desire. So as transcendentalists, we have to, or aspiring transcendentalists at least, we have to be very conscious of what our desires are. How are we moulding our desires? How are we desiring, how are we cultivating this desire to hear more about Krishna? How much are we relishing hearing these pastimes of Krishna? How much are we becoming detached from our material desires? So these are all measurements of our progress in spiritual life. Which is why Prabhupada say it is a science. It is measurable. We can measure our progress by these things, how much we're becoming detached from the material world and attached to hearing about Krishna's pastimes and associating with devotees and performing devotional service. So you know that famous verse by Rupa Goswami, that if you do not want to leave this material world, then don't go to the banks of the Yamuna River and see this beautiful young boy standing in a threefold bending form. Because if you see this young boy, then you'll lose all attachment for this material world. So this is the potency of hearing about Krishna and relishing these pastimes, is that we lose our attachment for this material world. We lose our material desires. So it's very, very potent hearing, especially this section of the Bhagavatam. Very, very, very potent. Because by hearing these intimate pastimes of Krishna, in the proper context and understanding Krishna's position, then our hearts will be alleviated of these material desires, this burden of, or self-imposed burden of material desires, material attachment which resides within our heart. Just by hearing, these things will be alleviated. So it's a very, very simple process and a very potent process. And those who are very fortunate will take advantage of that, of this hearing process. We can't underestimate the potency of hearing. Very, very, very powerful. So anyway, we can stop there. We can ask if there's any questions or comments that anybody has at all. Very nice section of the Bhagavatam. Very poetic. Sanskrit was very quite nice to chant. Sayapcha Kanto Java Lola Kundala. Very nice.
Nandana Prabhu, you said in the beginning that most of the gopis had the spiritual body, but some of them had material body. The body, and material body was there with their family and the spiritual body. So how did they live then? Theoretically, if the material body is the spirit soul is leaving the material body, and how the material body lives?
Explain here that when in the summary of this chapter, it's explained later on in this chapter, but it says in the summary, all the gopis have purely spiritual bodies, but when some of the gopis' husbands and other family members stopped the young girls from going, Lord Krishna arranged for them to temporarily exhibit material bodies, which they then left at the size of their husbands. In this way, they deceived their relatives and went off to meet Krishna. So through Krishna's arrangement, through his yogamaya potency, there was a manifestation of the form there, which stayed with the husband, but in their spiritual body they went off to be with Krishna.
What I'm asking is, how do you understand it? If the material body is left, that means there is no life, there is no consciousness. It's just like a dead body. Certainly.
It depends. I mean, Krishna, when Lord Brahma stole the cows and the cowherd boys, Krishna just made an arrangement where he expanded himself out to be their form, exact replicas of their form. So if Krishna wants to do that, he can do that through his potencies.
No, here the material body was left with the family, with the husband and children.
Yeah, but obviously in the context that it wasn't a dead body, it was obviously through Krishna's arrangement, there was consciousness present there.
Is it the soul is divided into, and part of the soul left with the material body, and rest of the how it was
fusion? It seems like some illusory form, was there? It seems like an illusory form, was there?
Yeah, Krishna arranged for them to temporarily exhibit material bodies. Yes, it's through Krishna's arrangement.
It's an illusory form, was
there? Yeah, it says exhibit material bodies, which means an illusory form.
Just like the example when Ravana took Sita. So then the mother said in the spirit said she entered into the fire and she stayed with Agnida in his abode. And then there was a Maya center. And then she was captured by Ravana and taken to Lanka at that time. So then the gopis, there was one form there, it was an illusory form. And the real gopis, the original gopis, that went with Krishna into the forest.
I walked into the paraphernalia room this morning and someone, Krishna Maharaj, was giving a lecture, and he said, someone asked him a question and his response was, if you want to know the answer to these things, then you have to go back to the spiritual world. So sometimes some things, to understand them properly, then we have to go back to the spiritual world sometimes as well. Any other questions or points at all?
How do we know if we're advancing in devotional service?
How do you know if you're advancing in devotional service? Simple things. It's like if we're developing an appreciation for hearing, we're attached to hearing. Now that's the main way, is if you're attached to hearing, transcendental literature, reading and hearing, if you become more attached to that, associating with devotees more, doing devotional service. Obviously, you can see if you're advancing by how your material desires are becoming minimised as well. You know, if you look where you were maybe, you know, 5-10 years ago, and where we are now, we can obviously see that advancements being made, because the desires we had back then are insignificant. We don't even worry about them anymore. So how much we're becoming detached from our material desires and contemplating those desires and becoming attached to Krishna, and, you know, other things, by how much, you know, thought we're having of Krishna throughout the day. You know, are we seeing things in relationship to Krishna? You know, what are we seeing as separate from Krishna, and what are we seeing as being connected to Krishna? So the more we're making advancement, we'll start naturally thinking of Krishna throughout the day as well. Different things we see will stimulate thought of Krishna within us. So Krishna, in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he shows us how to do those things, you know, just by meditating. He's a taste of water, and he's the light and sun of the moon. So many things we have around us which can stimulate thought of Krishna. So how much we're thinking of Krishna.
On the same point also, by your improvement in chanting, through the nama, see, you're living that nama bhava and all that, you can move potent, pure spiritual name.
Any other questions or points at all then? Grantara Shima Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki.